wasn't planning on having a little talk with you today, but there are two things I think need to be said. First of all, just a brief comment about the gospel reading that we have today from the third chapter of Luke, which starts out with a list of, you know, in the year, 15th year of Tiberius, and Herod was here, and Anna and Caiaphas were priests, and Philip was here, and these different guys were tetrarchs and so forth. Well, part of the point of that is, as I posted a piece on 1 Peter 5 about this, this is a way of ancient dating, because they didn't have modern calendars. So they do something almost like Venn diagrams. When all these people were in place in their different places, this thing happened. And if you overlap them, you know, you kind of know when that happened. Oh yeah, this guy was here, this guy was here. Okay, well this is when it happened. So that's one way of dating things. But I think the main point is that it establishes in Luke that this isn't fiction. What happens, what I'm relating here really happened. It happened in a historical point of time. It's not made up, it's not a myth, it's not fiction. This is real. This really happened, and this is when it happened. So that's part of what's happening here. The other point, another point of listing these particular rulers is to establish the kind of time they were living in. Who's in charge? And one of the things that you pick up from it is the terrific severity of the people that are mentioned. Even to the point of cruelty. So these are tough times, in other words, with a lot of tension. And that's part of the point of why these rulers are listed there at the beginning of Luke 3. Another point about mentioning that John is in the area of the Jordan and he's doing all these things is because that's where the 12 tribes of Israel crossed over into the promised land. So he is the herald. John is going to be the herald of the new Moses, who comes to bring all of the tribes back together again after the Assyrian exile. 10 of them were lost. There was a Babylonian exile that returned. But there's going to be one who comes to gather all the tribes. Not just all the tribes, but all the Gentiles as well. And there are other references throughout that indicate that the Lord is for all peoples, and he transcends these older figures. Okay, that's a takeaway. That's a point that you can take away, having to do with the gospel. I'm just going to return now to that issue about the people listed in Luke 3 and their severity, their cruelty. One of them being in Rome. Now Tiberius was not the worst of emperors. I mean, in a way, he was a pretty good administrator and did some very good things. But I mean, he had his moments of kind of mad cruelty too during his reign. And then there are all these other people, like Pontius Pilate is mentioned, you know, and a branch manager. And then there are these kings or tetrarchs who are clients of Rome, who are basically branch managers for the Romans. Perhaps there's a bit of a parallel to be drawn with something that happened this morning. I got up and my mailbox had a copy of the Bulletino. The Bulletino is a daily bulletin that's issued by the Holy See Press Office, and it had the text from the Congregation for Divine Worship with responses to dubia, questions posed to posed to the congregation about the implementation of traditionis custodes. And there are a lot of people who are kind of expecting this to come out. Rumors were talking about it coming out as a lovely little Christmas present for all the people who are interested in the traditional forms. And it's spectacularly cruel. It's very restrictive. It imposes a far greater restrictions than Traditionis Custodes had. And, you know, we expected this, didn't we? We expected this. And that there would be no pastoral sensitivity, no interest in charity. There would be a complete lack of concern for this burgeoning sector of the church in some geographical places. And we expected this. I mean, you know, it's not really a surprise. I mean, it's a surprise, but it's not really a surprise. We knew it was coming. We knew that, there's an old book from probably the 1970s called The House of God, written by a doctor who did his internship at a Boston hospital, and he wrote this fictional book about the weird stuff that goes on in hospitals. And one of the characters in the book is called the Fat Man, and the Fat Man has his certain laws, certain rules at the House of God, and meaning the hospital. And it's a perfect analogy for the church, too, the House of God. And one of the rules is that just when you think that in the hospital they cannot hurt you, they cannot possibly hurt you anymore, they can always hurt you more. And that's what this new set of responses to these questions does. And one of the things in it that really indicates, I think, in a very subtle way, the intentions of the people who put this thing out. First of all, I really don't believe. I have a hard time believing that these are actual questions that were sent into the congregation. I think that they are things that they came up with on their own. And so it's a pretext, you know, basically. It's just like the so-called survey that was done to bishops was used as an excuse to issue Traditionis Custodes. And the results of that survey of bishops around the world about the use of, about the implementation of Suborum Pontificum, didn't produce the results that they maybe hoped. They just said, well, okay, this is what it said, and then they won't show it to anybody. But I don't think that the questions, even the questions, were set in. I think there are pretexts so that they could issue a decree of some sort, a more restrictive implementation. And in one of them, to my absolute shock, shall we say, I read in there that, you know, this it imposes this terrible restriction, this cruel restriction, and then it says, by doing this, we by no means mean to marginalize the people who want to participate in these things. Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. So, my dear friends, we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do, how we're going to react to this. The first thing that we should do is, you know, stay calm, you know, not freak out, and it would be a very good thing to examine our consciences and go to confession as a first step of figuring out how we are going to react to all of this collectively, as individuals, as small communities, and so forth. I predict that there's going to be a measure of defiance in regard to this. I just don't see how it could be otherwise, and then we'll see what happens after that. But we need to spend now more time on our knees and with some choice mortifications and some very pointed petitions for our prayer, and making sure that our own house is very clean. So examine your consciences, go to confession, stay calm, and then we'll see how things develop. Dominus obiscum, oremus. Exsulta sanctis filia Sion, predica filia Jerusalem, et rex tuus venit tibi sanctus et salvator.